The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me. All summer long we sang a song, and then we strolled that golden sand. Two sweethearts and the summer wind.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. My co-host Sandy Williams, and you, Sandy, the music.
Well, it's summer music, and I think that's Kelvin's choice. It's a good one. It was just celebrating the great weather in the summer, and the state of Wisconsin is celebrating it right now.
So, Sandy, before we went to break, we were talking about, you know, you and I and our generation lived at a different time when everybody had a fair shot in capitalism. Reigned supreme, and capitalism meant that, you know, everybody wasn't left behind for the most part. There was an opportunity for everybody to benefit in this country. And so in your and my lifetime, in the 30 or 40 year period hence, we've seen this transformation and the middle class wind up where it is, and the poor getting even poorer and the wealthy getting even wealthier. And so you talked about some factors that came into play that created this situation. Are you saying that it was inevitable that the society and the capitalism that you and I knew couldn't sustain itself? It had to.
Well, I think there were a lot of inexorable forces at work. Okay. The United States, coming out of World War II, had not decided, like almost all of the other countries, developed countries in the world, to have a healthcare system that was free to its public, to have an education system that was free to its public, to have strong pension programs. So what happened was that, coming out of World War II, the United States was really the only economy in the world that was standing on its feet. The rest of the world was on its knees because it had been in the Great War. And so we didn't worry about world competition. And for instance, the automotive industry, they were all unionized. Our manufacturing was all unionized, but it wasn't a problem because the union contracts were uniform across an industry.
Right.
And all the industrial competitors had the same wage costs. So it wasn't a competitive disadvantage to have wages set through union operations. And as a result, the union settlements provided for middle-class incomes for workers. And a single wage earner got a family into the middle class, much like your family.
That's the life I live.
Yes.
Right.
And so, similarly, though, healthcare being not provided by the government was provided through the workplace. And when you got a job, whether it was unionized or not, you tended to get your healthcare covered. So no one in our generation ever talked about healthcare at all. There was a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan for everybody, no matter where they worked. And their work, and the employer provided it. And it was employer-provided pensions as well. Well, that worked in the environment in which the United States was the only player. But as Japan emerged as an automotive and other manufactured good competitor in the early 70s, and as the rest of the world was waking up and rubbing the matter out of their eyes from an economic standpoint, we began to experience competition, and it began to be a cost problem. Okay, similarly, our healthcare system was set up on an insured payor basis, and the Blue Cross Blue Shield system was essentially retrospective premiums. So, if you had a group policy for your business at Tower Automotives or A. O. Smith, you would experience medical costs last year that would get paid for in the premiums for your insurance this year. And so the insurance process was simply a method of carrying the cost forward, but there wasn't any cost discipline built into it. Whatever the medical costs were, they were covered in the premiums next year. And as a result of this undisciplined cost process for insurance for our healthcare system, our healthcare costs began to fly up dramatically, and to fly up much more dramatically than the rest of the world's healthcare costs. By the 1990s, we had a couple of situations in play. Our healthcare systems were very high. Our healthcare costs were very high, and the employers no longer enjoyed the process of having to cover those costs. They became a very material part of the costs of employees, and they wanted to move away from that and put the cost back on the employee. And they began to lobby for that kind of process. And two, pensions became very expensive to support. They had defined benefit plans, which meant that when you retired, you got a certain amount of money rather than just be able to withdraw money out of an account that was yours. And those, as we got older and more people began to retire, our pension plans went out of whack in the private sector, and they wanted to move away from doing their own pensions. And so that what do we end up with? We ended up with laws that allowed many businesses to shed healthcare costs from them, from their own side of the process, and shift it over to the worker. And pensions began to be something that was borne by the worker. On the education side, we had set up loan programs so students would have plenty of money to pay for tuition. As a result, our tuition costs flew up very rapidly because it was a pretty undisciplined process. Schools had learned well how to counsel their students into making applications for all the student loans necessary to pay for the tuition, whatever it was. And so here we have it. You know, we had a system that didn't have the right kind of processes in place to have cost discipline. And we had some inexorable demographic factors. And because we were a system that was not initially premised on the government being involved in that process, we ended up where we are today.
So now we're here. So what are the adjustments that are going to be made by the government? Because you talked about lobbyists, and the lobbyists have already lobbied the corporations lobbied the government on behalf of the corporations. So how is it possible then that somebody's going to correct what is clearly a snowball rolling down the side of a hill?
Well, I think that what needs to happen is leaders, government leaders, political leaders, business leaders need to look at the current system and understand that what we don't have right now is something that is long-term sustainable, that the trend lines on this, the trajectory isn't good, okay? It's there's too much disparity in income that can't be sustained in the long term. The middle class, the median family, is on the wrong trajectory in terms of the comfort level they can achieve and the amount in which they're sharing in the generation of wealth. And we need to adopt programs. And I would assert that people who are interested in sustaining successful business environment in the United States would be actively interested in making the changes necessary to make our capitalism more sustainable. And to make it more sustainable would involve some government interventions into the process to create a healthcare system that is not borne on the shoulders of the workers and that is too expensive, okay? It needs to be a shared cost that's pooled across the entire country. And that's a very big issue. We need to have daycare systems that work because now we have two workers instead of one under the economy that we've evolved into. And these are all things that business ought to be a driving force behind.
But Sandy, so, you know, there was a time when corporations looked at long-term profit.
Yeah.
You know, during the times that I worked for A.O. Smith, the company looked at long-term profitability. But I also saw when global economics came into play, all of that dynamic changed from long-term profitability to short-term profitability. That transformation also had a major impact on things.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame that on globalization. I would blame that on the shift in the way capital was being deployed. In the 50s and 60s, we had shareholders, but we didn't have active private equity operations. We didn't have active leverage buyout processes. We hadn't gone in the direction of conglomerate industry. And I would say that it all began with conglomerate businesses where someone who used to make just automobile frames like A.O. Smith would decide, you know what, we should buy any business that looks attractive to us, whether it's related to the automobile industry or not. And so we had Ling Temco Vought was one of the earliest of these, but we had these businesses crop up who had started out being manufacturers of airplane parts and ended up making couches and whatever else they could invest in. And they began to buy those companies and realize that when they bought the company, they could re-leverage it, they could refinance that company, suck money out of it, they could buy a company with its own money, you know, not their money,
right,
but the company's money that they were buying. And that became contagious, and we ended up with now then leverage buyouts, which was third parties doing it, and then private equity. And so we ended up in a process in which people were buying and selling companies like you buy and sell homes, but even on a shorter term. And as a result of that, the long-term profit horizon became a short-term profit
because
horizon.
The rules were changed. The rules were changed by government officials who made it possible for corporations to do that. Or
no,
was it always the capabilities of doing that was always
there? No, the capabilities were there. It's just that business evolved and Wall Street evolved, and they began to realize that, hey, there's money to be made this other way, okay? We don't have to buy businesses and operate them for the long term. We can buy businesses, pretty them up, sell them to somebody else for a gain in the short term. And that became a way of business that created the process of short-term analysis, short-term profit analysis.
But that helped break the back of the middle class.
Well,
those kinds of decisions certainly benefited business.
Well, it started, you know, the notion of layoffs were not something that was done until about 1970. That we began to have layoffs and we began to look at workers as something that was a cost input and nothing else, okay? That was the sole way of judging it.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. You know, this is clearly a conversation that points out why we're where we are right now. And so we're going to continue it on the other side, 844-967-2789, and find out if there's a way out of it. My co-host Sandy Williams certainly is in a position to have the discussion. You can join us at 844-967-2789 on the Earl England Show. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You can text us at that. Sandy, I'm going to read a couple texts. Capitalism would work if we had referees on the field and no monopolies. Capitalism with no referees brings about monopolies. Because government has been captured by money, corporate captured, and money in politics, and people leave government and work for private companies, corporate capture. Reagan affected everything, effed everything up. It's very difficult to have democracy and pure capitalism without referees on the field. We don't need billionaires, earned benefits, not entitlements. So, Sandy, we've been talking about how we got here. And so the average American knows it's not working for them and their families. And so there's got to be a fix, and it can't be the way it is moving now. There has to be a fix for the American people. And there are two different sides in this when we talk about the fix. And so one side is saying we don't need the regulations. Regulations impact business, and so we need to just allow capitalism to be free and flowing. And another side is saying, hey, wait a minute. We've got to regulate it. We've got to do something to adjust it, to bring back some sanity in all of this so the average American has a chance.
Well, you know, there's two things. One of them is the question of regulating businesses so that there are, one, competitive marketplaces, a referee in the market to make sure that markets are, in fact, competitive without monopolies. There's regulation to make sure that businesses abide by sufficient rules to make them trustworthy, the Food and Drug Administration, related to the safety of the products sold, which actually helps them because, you know, it's got the good housekeeping seal of approval. It's more likely to sell if it's been approved. So these things are not all necessarily derogatory to the industries. The airplane you fly in is safe because the FAA has cleared it. It might not be safe if it wasn't. So these things are not all anti-business, right? They actually afford business protection because they promise the public quality with respect to the output of the businesses. But there's a second area of change that's needed to support capitalism. That has to do with making sure that the results of capitalism create a societal situation that is sustainable. That's the sustainable side of capitalism. And that means that the result of capitalism has to be that there's a substantial middle class that lives a satisfactory life that is supportable and sustainable. And so there are some things that government needs to do to support that, because it's not happening with unbridled capitalism, and it's not happening with the way that it's playing out in the United States, with as the result of, for instance, the burden of healthcare costs, the burden of all the benefits that have shifted away from the employer to the employee, and the rate of cost increase of, for instance, healthcare, which when shifted to the employee and then runaway costs on top of it, mean that, you know, 20% of an income can necessarily be devoted to healthcare. That's unsustainable. Okay. So I think that what we need to look at is the things that need to happen to make sure that the wonderful outcome that can occur as the result of capitalism actually occurs because of the proper functioning of government. And when I look at the two parties right now, there's only one party that's trying to address what is necessary to fix the trajectory of capitalism and to better support capitalism. And surprisingly, that's the Democratic Party, because they are the ones who are looking at trying to do things to make put the middle class in a more sustainable position. They're the ones who are looking at healthcare and trying to deal with and revise the healthcare system so that it's less broken than it is currently. Everyone agrees it's broken. There's nothing in Project 2025 or any of the platform of the other side that relates to fixing the healthcare system in a manner that would be better supportive for the middle class and the cost burden that it puts on the middle class. And so, you know, I think that what people ought to stand back and think about is, what do we need to have a vibrant, sustainable capitalist system? And then which party are we going to go to that's going to do the best job of making sure that our business environment actually works? And instead of looking at this as we, they, like, oh, one side's only for the workers and one side's only for business, I would assert that the Democratic Party right now has got a balance, because I think a lot of what they're doing is for the benefit of business. I mean, Boeing would be much better off if the FAA had done a better job of regulating Boeing. The FDA, the products that we produce, we would all be better off if we trusted them even more than we do now. And how do you get trust for them other than by trusting the government regulation that is there to protect, to provide safety in the output of the products? So I would say that let's go to the financial industry and realize that that's a model that the business people ought to be looking at and saying, you know what? Proper regulation by the government can be very important to us in terms of creating a public trust for our products that will make them more successful. And we ought not to be fighting this. We ought to be making sure that it's done adequately, correctly, efficiently. But we shouldn't be trying to run away from all that process. Project 2025 is going backwards in time to create a version of capitalism that I guarantee you Adam Smith would never have embraced.
You know, Sandy, I guess I would ask you, we're looking at a nation like China that was in the Dark Ages not so long ago, uplifting its people to middle class standards under socialism. How is it possible that they've been able to hold together?
Well, what's interesting is they were a communist country.
Communism. I'm sorry.
Communism is a form of socialism, but right. It was even more extreme. And they have shifted away. The way they've done this is to shift away from communism, to shift towards capitalism. But they have the underpinnings of a socialist kind of support to, for instance, workers for
right.
healthcare and for the rest of it. Much the way Europe, which didn't have a socialist system, but when they decided to design their government, they designed it in a manner that provided things that in the United States were provided through the employer. They provided it through the government. So, you know, and healthcare insurance, for instance, is not the government taking over the delivery of healthcare to our system, because when it's government-provided insurance, Medicare, for instance, who's the provider? The provider's a private hospital.
So it's a hybrid form.
Hybrid, exactly.
All right. 844-967-2789 is the number. Hang on the phone lines. It's Friday. That means you're tuned in to Sandy Williams on the Earl Ingram Show. I know.
Twitter's gone, way to rest. Once again, the leaves have returned to the trees. I can just feel that soft summer breeze. There's magic in the air. Winter's disappeared. It's summer.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. And Sandy, you know, I am really enjoying, this conversation, because it is what's at the root of what has happened in this country. And my fear is that we see it, we know it, we understand it, many of us, but where is the power to change the trajectory of the people who have created it?
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking off the air, but I think the analogy I used was, you know, unfortunately, something you mentioned earlier is what's captivated both the political side and the business side, which is a very short-term planning horizon. And that short-term planning horizon doesn't allow people to look forward enough to see that the trajectory of our current version of capitalism is unsustainable, right? They're looking at the next quarter. They're looking at just the next year. In Congress, everyone's looking at a two-year election cycle. That's a pretty short planning horizon. In business, they're looking at short profit horizons. And so as a result, people aren't looking at the long-term problem. I was alarmed by the Project 2025 concept, which is basically designed to put all of the power, as much power as possible, into the hands of the president to create what essentially they would hope would be a benevolent despot who would run everything in government, okay, as much as possible, plan it from the top. Well, first of all, that's central planning. That's totally abhorrent to the marketplace. It's a very unmarketplace response to government, for instance, to try and figure out how government ought to operate by putting all the power in the hands of a single focus of power. But secondly, some of the comments in Project 2025, they have the notion that we shouldn't worry about climate change because our future generations will be ingenious enough and the marketplaces will be good enough to deal with whatever it is that we hand to them. Well, that's like ignoring the fact that it's like the analogy I used was, we've got both Congress and business and they're flying in a plane, and they're having a great flight. It's a luxury flight. They're having a lot of fun. And unfortunately, nobody's looking out the windshield off at the horizon to see what it is they're flying into, okay? And they're flying into something that's going to be catastrophic.
So Sandy, how much of it is then, it seems to me that their response to all of these things is, okay, we're America, we're losing our place in all of this, but we keep spending all this money on military. Because if nothing else, we've still got the big stick.
Well, you know, a lot of that psychosis, I believe, is driven by K Street, because you know what? It's profitable to have a big stick. Project 2025 says right in it, we want to be the arsenal for democracy in the world. We want to sell more arms around the world, and we're going to arm up our country even more. It talks about rebuilding the Army, the Navy, the yes. Marines, everybody, everything. And so that's a good profit center, you know, just like one of the callers said, war is a profit center, and it's a short-term profit center. I simply say that what we need is people out there, people who are going to vote, and people who are going to be leaders in both business and politics, to take a longer planning horizon, look forward in time, and say, let's make sure that our business environment, our capitalism, is the strongest version of capitalism and the best business environment in the world. And to do that, we need to do some things. We need to make sure that we're on a sustainable course. And like I said earlier, the only party that seems to be working at fixing any of this stuff is the Democratic Party. The Republican Party wants to put a screen over that windshield on that plane. And they're going to party. They're going to party like there's no tomorrow, because there might be a tomorrow, but there won't be a day after tomorrow on the current course.
All right, let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Please let me finish a point.
Well, you know, when you start off with please let me finish a point, you know, go ahead.
There we go. You guys refuse to talk about, you speak of the military. I haven't heard you mention one thing about the U.S. jets being scrambled because multiple Russian fighter jets and two H-6 Chinese bombers were just detected over Alaska.
So what do you want to do, go to war, CJ?
Covering the news.
So, CJ, what do you want to do, go to war with Russia and China?
What do you want to do? Just not even...
Actually, I don't understand the hysteria in your voice, CJ, but, you know, we have scramble situations quite frequently. And yes, we have flown our planes over and around Taiwan and caused the Chinese to scramble, and apparently tit for tat. But, you know, I don't think we've gotten to the point of hysterical... endangerment with respect to those things. There's no discussion here about having the United States not be in a leadership role with respect to its capacity to have a military. The fact is that we are in that position and we have that leadership role. But anyway, it's a non sequitur, and we've been talking about trying to fix the business environment and the environment for middle class America so that it's sustainable. And I'm not sure that whether planes are scrambled or not has much to do with that.
Go ahead, CJ.
Well, this president and this vice president want to raise the corporate taxes to drive businesses offshore again, when President Trump lowered taxes and businesses were coming back. And these planes weren't being flying over, and the blue spy balloons weren't being flying over, and our farmland wasn't being sold to Chinese. So pull your head out of your butt and start covering real news.
All right, CJ, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Much for...
You know, without that advice, I would have spent my day with my head there, I guess. Which is a contortion that's difficult, I'll tell you.
Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Hey, good morning to you, Bill. Hey, they're coming. The Russians and the Chinese, we need to prepare for World War III, nuclear weapons, according to CJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Sandy, I'm picturing that contortion in my head, and it's not pretty.
No. It's a really unpleasant way to spend your day, I'll tell you.
But to CJ, I'm begging CJ, take a little less fear pill. Just cut on the fear pills, just a little bit. I can give you a prescription for your fear pills. Shut off Fox for a couple hours. Watch it a couple hours less. And then the Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. Please do get some sleep. I just laugh at you guys with all your fear. You wake up every day with something to be more fearful about. I wake up every day to see how our country is moving forward. I don't care. You know, you want to go backwards? That's okay. But for me, CJ, we're moving forward. Fear, get the fear stick out, slap everybody with a fear stick, let's all run around. But let's not do the contortion Sandy's going into, please.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Tom from Richland Center. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what?
Yeah. I just want to mention that the U.S. has 800 bases around the world, and China has a couple, and Russia has maybe two, three. And we spend more money on defense than the next nine countries added up, including Russia and China. And I like the idea of America being the policeman of the world to help intervene in conflicts when you have to pull people apart like a referee. But I don't think we should be the one creating an empire and taking people's livelihoods away with our corporations and defending them. So we got a big role to play in the world, but it doesn't have to be the big stick. It can be the big brother.
Hey, Tom, you just told the unadulterated truth about all of the military bases that we have around the world compared to China and Russia. You just told the truth. Let's go to Cassandra from Madison. Good morning to Cassandra. You say what?
Hi, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. I just listened to CJ. I'm just primarily calling about CJ. And I just have a question for him, or I should ask him to, or I want him to reflect upon, you know, how he approaches people and if he just wants to insult or if he wants to persuade people to the conservative or even the Republican side. You know, one thing that people should know, many Black Americans are socially conservative, and regrettably, we have not done our job in academia in explaining that most Blacks are what would be considered Frederick Douglass conservatives. They're not necessarily always Republican, but many of their ideological views, their social conservatism, it can be a part of the Republican Party. The problem is people like CJ, who wants to try and win people over, not by persuasion, but in a form of domination. And that's really all I have to say. He comes across so angry and judgmental. Who would want to join and hook up with your cause if that is what you're putting out? That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for the call. I don't want to respond to CJ and, you know, and who he is and what he represents, because he clearly, you know, you hear him, and that's who he is. Let's go to Dave from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Dave. You say what?
Good morning. Sandy, I've been hearing you talk or use the phrase sustainable capitalism. And to many people, that's an oxymoron, because my understanding of capitalism is that fundamentally it's dependent on constant growth, and our free market system depends on unbridled consumption. How is that sustainable on a finite planet?
Well, actually, I think you're wrong about on both counts, that finite growth is infinite growth is required. But that's definitely the quest of each business. But that doesn't mean that that's the necessary outcome for each business. Capitalism is really just the way that decisions, it's a system in which it's the way that decisions get made about how money is allocated and who makes the choices. And it's as simple as that, how money gets raised. So I disagree with the fundamental premise. And I think that there is such a thing as sustainable capitalism.
Well, you know, talking about, you know, what's going on in China and you know, the socialist, and even in America, the socialism we used to have with, you know, our health care and our, you know, the safety net that's being taken away, it's being chipped away.
Let me interrupt you there, though. We never had it provided by the government before. So we had that safety net, but in America, it was designed the way we came out of World War II. That was all left to businesses to provide. So it wasn't socialized in a governmental sense. It was only socialized in a corporate sense. And that's what's disappearing. So, you know, the problem is that the original design of our system coming out of World War II was different than the original design of all the other developed countries. And we're paying the price.
You referred to the, you know, some of the European countries having some elements of socialism, and that's why they are so successful. And you know, socialism always bails out the capitalists when they get in trouble with their investments. So why don't we just go to a socialist system?
Hey, Dave, thank you very much for the call. Guys, hang on the phone lines. 844-967-2789. Is the number. It's Friday. That means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you. Seals and Croft.
See the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's all right. Summer breeze makes me feel fine.
All right, welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Once again, Sandy, a robust conversation.
It's the summer breeze. It's got us all stimulated.
All right, let's go to Don from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Don. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. I don't know exactly what the topic is. I thought it was more or less the downfall of the middle class. So I don't know if I'm on the topic.
No. Go ahead.
I would say there were a couple factors in this. First of all, these constant tax cuts. Every time a Republican gets in there, there's a Reagan tax cut, then you have a Bush tax cut, and then you have a Trump tax cut. That doesn't help the middle class any. And there's two bipartisan bills that come to mind. Back in 1980, the Motor Truck Act was passed by Jimmy Carter, who signed it, and there, thousands of companies are out of business, thousands of jobs that were paying good money, health insurance, everything gone. The other bipartisan bill, this happened in the 90s. We had Bill Clinton as our president. And, well, the Republicans pushed for this NAFTA Act. And, they passed it. And naturally, Bill Clinton signed it. now, they're all our jobs, unions jobs, gone overseas, gone. Now, that doesn't help. These bipartisan bills never turn out good for the middle class.
Hey, Don, I wish I had more time, but thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Gene from Eclair. Good morning to you, Gene.
Good morning. I just got my head out of my you-know-where so I could talk. So thank you for taking time. Thank you for this call because it was a real big job. Anyway, so you got to remember how great the greatest, the eighth wonder of the world, Foxconn, that we sat with and we paid out for, and all those people in the state of Wisconsin that lost their homes. And, you know, what we need to do is get corporations out of government, and with that law that corporations are people, we got to get that money out of there. We got to keep them out of the decisions. They can be up the table, and they have equal space as normal people. I mean, you know, as far as head of their corporation, head of different groups that are concerned about the environment. I mean, if we're really going to do this, we got to bring all people in, but corporations need to take their place. They're not people. They're not running our country, and we're getting sick of their money and politics, and that's all I got to say. So you guys have a good weekend, and thank you so much.
Hey, Gene, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for the call. Brendan, you say what?
Yeah, I just wanted to say real quickly, Gene kind of stole a little bit of my thunder, but wow, CJ, you're just running out of things to complain about. But the thing with capitalism, as Americans, we constantly look for the perfection in everything, and there is no perfection in anything. And capitalism has its good and it has its bad. And that's it. I mean, you can bring the good and bad up on anything. So, I'm glad we live in a capitalist society for many reasons. And there are some things I don't like about it, but, that's it. You guys have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Brendan. You know, Sandy, nobody's saying that we think you should just totally do away.
Well, and it isn't even total. What we're talking about is on the fringes, right? How healthcare gets delivered and paid for is a fringe issue associated. Now, it is true that 20% of our economy is devoted to healthcare, and every other country it's more like 12%, okay? And the whole reason it's 20 in our country is because it's been so broken for so long and it's lacked cost discipline because of the way it's been designed. And we need to redesign it. We need to look at how it gets delivered. We need to fix just some elements here to make our version of capitalism sustainable and to assure that our economy continues to be such a very powerful economy in the world economy. But we have a world economy now. We can't avoid that. We can't recompartmentalize the world. We will not like what our lifestyle is like if we erect prohibitive tariffs and try to compartmentalize the United States back into being not part of a global economy.
Sandy, we got a new caller, Michael from Kansas City. Good morning to you, Michael. You say what, sir?
Good morning. I just wanted to ask the question of if you think there's a way back from the negative influences of corporate money, special interest money in politics, as a government should have the role of regulating these entities. But when you have so much of their money that buys our politicians who really work for them primarily, is there a way to get past that? Or we want to be able to recover from this? Because as the things are going now, I think that we're in a very, very deep downward slope.
Hey, Mike, I wish we had more time. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for the call, Sandy. Quick.
Well, I think money out of politics, you know, we have to work on that. Both parties need to. And actually, there's even whispers of doing that in Project 2025. I think both sides worry about the elite. And sometimes when they talk about the elite, they're talking about this dark money that seems to be running things independent from the interests of anybody other than the particular interest.
Sandy, I wish we had more time, man. The time just flies. A great conversation, as always, this morning. Thank everybody who made the show go. Enjoy this great weather, no matter where you are. Calvin, thank you, man. We could not do this without you. Up next, Jane Mednar, Mednar on Air with Greg Bach. I'll see you guys on Monday.
calling you.